Look, I mean, Basel is over at this point. I mean, the show is over. Things are changed forever. There's no question about it.
It's a bit of musical chairs happening, you know, and I think today Rolex got up and kind of walked out of the group and lifted the needle off the record and said, like, hey, guess what?
Hey everybody, I'm your host Stephen Pulverin, and this is a special bonus episode of Hodinkee Radio. You may or may not have seen, but this morning news broke that Rolex, Tudor, Patek Philippe, Chopard, and Chanel are leaving Baselworld. These five major brands are going to be setting up their own new watch show with the FHH. It'll start in April 2021, and this is absolutely massive news. Everybody's first question, I think, is Baselworld dead? Is this the end of Baselworld? So I thought I would grab Ben, James, and Jack on a quick Zoom call so we could talk through the news. This just landed in our inbox a couple hours ago. We've got a story up on the site, but I thought it was important to get our first impressions out there, and we're going to have tons of reporting as this develops. So without further ado, let's do it. Hey team, how are you guys doing?
All right.
Yeah, we're here.
I love the thumbs up, Ben.
That's good for radio.
An audio medium, and we get a. Yeah, it's great. It's perfect. You're a pro at this. We woke up this morning to some pretty wild news, so I wanted to hop on a call with you guys real quick so we could talk through it and get our first reactions. We started having a conversation in our company Slack this morning relatively early because Rolex, Patek Philippe, Chanel, Chopard, and Tudor have jointly announced that they are leaving Baselworld and starting a brand new watch show with the FHH in 2021.
Yeah.
It's not what I expected to wake up to on a Tuesday
that's
morning.
A thing for sure. No. I mean, it's so seldom. So a little backstory. So I received a note from Rolex Geneva about this from their publicity team over there. And it's so rare, honestly, to hear from them at all. You know, usually we hear from Rolex USA or, you know, some subsidiary, et cetera. Sure. So to get a note from Rolex Geneva is highly unusual, even for us. And then I think beyond that, you open it up and you say, okay, not only is Rolex leaving, but they're actually communicating on behalf of Patek Philippe, which is, you know, goes without saying is Patek Philippe, Chopard, who else? Chanel. And then, of course, Tudor. You know, it's just the idea that, like, Rolex is doing anything with anyone is kind of the craziest thing about this. So the fact that they would engage in conversations with other brands is something that, frankly, I don't think I've ever even heard of them doing in any way, really.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's very, very weird to see that. I do think it's telling that things are, you know, in some cases alphabetical, and in most cases Rolex goes first, which is always an interesting thing to see. But
yeah, and I think even, you know, as Joe T pointed out to us in Slack, you know, if you read the note carefully, Carl Frederick from Chopard says, you know, this is the Rolex initiative. So it's clear that, you know, whether they initiated it or not, you know, it is now kind of deemed the Rolex initiative, and you know they put that in print. So it's clear that they're kind of leading the charge here, I would say.
Yeah, I have to admit it was an enormous surprise for all of us initially, but perhaps not that surprising, given how rapidly the relationship between the MCH group and a lot of the major participating brands have gone downhill over the last couple of years. You know, we saw Swatch Group leave, you know, the entire group. And I have to say, though, there was it felt like there was an awfully strong emotional commitment to keeping the show going on some level from precisely the brands that have now just decamped en masse to another location.
Yeah, it's shocking. It really is. I mean, it's also just the fact that, like, we're getting this news in the middle of a pandemic. You know, there are so many things that we're experiencing now, all of us, you know, globally, that, like, we just couldn't have fathomed, like, maybe 2 months ago. You know, I mean, it's just thing, like, times are so bizarre and they're getting crazier. And I think, you know, as we, you know, I think, you know, astutely put in the story that we put up, most people don't care about this. You know, most people in the, even in the watch world, don't really care how the watches come out. all we know now is that, you know, barring Rolex and Patek releasing something mid-year, which they don't normally do, we're not going to see any new releases until a year from right now, which I think is kind of to the core of our audience. That's probably the biggest news, you know, that we won't see a new Daytona or a new GMT or a new whatever until April 2021.
I think for consumers, one of the most important outcomes for this story, you know, if you're interested in watches and you were excited to see some new stuff, you're going to have to wait.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things to me is that looking back, like, you can see a breadcrumb trail, but you couldn't, I don't think you could have anticipated it, right? Like, there was the news that Patek, they announced first, and then Rolex and Tudor announced that they were delaying launches indefinitely. They didn't put time limits on it, but not launching anything right now. Then you get this note from Hubert Duplessis to, you know, basically the entire governing board of Swiss watchmaking, a bunch of different organizations, saying that he's upset with how the organizers of Basel World and the town of Basel handled everything. And he's on the Rolex board. And you never hear of anyone from Rolex speaking as individuals. And granted, he has other posts and he was speaking as a representative of those organizations. But still, just to hear somebody from Rolex speak out publicly and say that they were unhappy about something, in hindsight, feels like it definitely was leading up to this. Like, this makes sense in that context, as John said in the story this morning.
Yeah, I mean, as you just said, Stephen, it's just like Rolex does not communicate at all. And I think, you know, as I said in my story, for, you know, when I went and said Rolex 5 or 6 years ago, it's just like every other brand is shouting from the rooftops about the you know, the new dial color. And Rolex doesn't even tell people that they completely changed the, you know, basically like core functionality of the 4130 caliber when they did so in the Daytona. So the fact that they're coming out and talking about this, it really tells you how bad it must have been, I would say. Or it's a new Rolex, which is also possible.
Yeah, I would have loved to be a fly on the wall for the, you know, for the decisive meetings with MCH group. I can't imagine that it was a warm, fuzzy experience.
Yeah, you know, we know the MCH group. They, you know, they're doing everything they can. They're in a really tough spot. You know, they really are.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, I've heard that, you know, they made, and you know, they, it's referenced in this note that like a lot of these massive decisions, such as, you know, moving Basel to April in the first place for 2020, was made without communicating to Rolex, Patek, and LVMH. You know, and those are three pretty important people to the world of watches and certainly to Basel World. And I mean, that would be, I mean, I can't even, you know, that would be like NFL moving the Super Bowl without telling the teams. You know what I mean? Like, you just can't do that.
Yeah. I mean, James, you tend to cover things more from the product side. And I wonder, you know, you've been going to Basel World for years and years. And how have you seen it kind of change over the last couple of years leading up to this kind of massive change?
The funny thing is I think this is a confluence of several different events. But like from that one standpoint, leading up over the last few years, there was always kind of an annual question that got a little bit warmer every year. Like, what is going on here? How does this relate to SIHH? And then when we started to see more expansion of the Watches and Wonders kind of brand into other shows, then suddenly there weren't two shows, there was four or five, depending on how you looked at it. And I think it kind of expanded at a time that ended up being very poor for this year. And one of the outcomes here is that a few brands have had to essentially put their foot down and say, like, nope, we have things to protect, and we don't feel like everybody's on the same page here. From a watch journalist coverage sort of standpoint, like, obviously we were going to lose this year's shows either way. That doesn't come down to this decision in any metric at all. But for next year, if in anything, it's condensed, which theoretically should make for a pretty strong a show. Certainly a different sort of flow than we're used to previously with a January, March kind of existence. But we were already moving to April anyway, so I'm not sure that there's as big a lift. I mean, the real downfall here is for Basel and Basel World.
Yeah, I agree. I think the economy of Basel, Switzerland will forever be changed because of this. No question about it. I mean, this is Mardi Gras. This is, you know, this is any major event that like effectively lifts up an entire town. You know, Basel has industry and it's very big in pharmaceuticals, etc. But I mean, this is a massive, massive event for that town.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to me to see how all of the hospitality stuff, I mean, this is like super inside baseball, but there's been all these reports about, you know, hotels not giving refunds and charging people to rebook. Now with this changing, it'll be interesting to see all the Rolex Patek retailers who moved their appointments to January now canceling. It'll be interesting to see kind of whether the town tries to like make some goodwill moves or whether they just like take every dollar they can get and say like, off you go.
Look, I mean, Basel is over at this point. I mean, the show is over. You know, I mean, even if Swatch decided to come back, which I don't think they would at this point, you know, it's just without the two core brands, and, you know, inevitably, you know, we don't know when, but I mean, LVMH has always done stuff around SIHH, so it won't even be that big of a deal if they just did their own show around the same time. Things are changed forever. There's no question about it. And I think it'll be really interesting to see down the road, you know, when it comes time to April of 2021, is how things are kind of timed and scaled there. Because, you know, the big boys of the SIHH are now kind of like the little guys. And I think that'll be an interesting position for, let's say, a Cartier, who we all love and adore. But, like, in the grand scheme of things, in the watch world, Patek and Rolex are you know, significantly more meaningful commercially and editorially, et cetera, to most watch folks than say, a Cartier or an AP or anything like that. So I wonder, you know, how they'll kind of view things and how they'll work together to make sure that kind of, you know, everyone is covered the right way. Because it's going to be, I mean, from our side, it's going to be really overwhelming to have all the brands, including the two big ones now, launching at the same time. And then, of course, if you have LVMH and Swatch come in at the same time, I mean, this could be a mess. You know, this could be a lot of stuff at once.
It's basically going to be Basel World. It's going to be more Basel World than Basel World.
To give people some context, right? So, like, in 91 is when Cartier and a couple other brands, you know, Mercier, Genta, Daniel Roth, a couple others, splintered off and created the SIHH. And the idea was to get away from Basel, do something more exclusive, do something where they could be the focus. Yeah. And then we've seen it kind of like it fragmented into two shows. It became you're either in Camp A or Camp B. Then the independents started doing both shows. Then Swatch Group split off. It's been like this weird, like it really kind of like fanned out. Yeah. And like James said, it's now all collapsing in again.
It's a bit of musical chairs happening.
Yeah.
Know? And I think today Rolex got up and kind of walked out of the group and lifted the needle off the record and said like, hey, guess what? Like,
yeah. I think to me that one of the things that I don't want to get lost here is that the five brands are doing this with the FHH,
yeah,
which is the body that puts on SIHH. So like, this isn't like what LVMH has done in the past where they say like, we're going to do an event at the same time. It's essentially a competitor. It's in a different part of Geneva. Like, we're going to invite you to stuff that competes directly with stuff at SIHH. And it becomes sort of like they make everybody choose. This in theory is being done in a way that's sort of simpatico with the with Watches and Wonders Geneva.
Yeah, and I think it's really nice. I mean, I think, you know, as an ex-jury member of the Grand Prix de Horlogerie de Genève, like, you know, you always wonder, like, where are these guys? You know, where is Rolex and Patek in this? Okay, Tudor might, you know, be in there every now and then. You get Lange, you know, one out of every 3 years. You get Vacheron every now and then, AP every now and then. But, like, where is everybody? Why isn't everybody kind of, like, in this together? And this, to me, feels like we're all kind of in it together for the first time in my career in this industry, at least more so than before. And I think it's amazing, as you said, Stephen, that they're doing this with the FHH, because I frankly never would have expected it. I mean, Rolex is not a member of the FHH, right? I mean, neither is Patek Philippe, for that matter. They don't play that game. So, you know, I don't know if that'll change over you know, the next few months, few years. But I mean, just the fact that they're engaging at all with the kind of other folks in Switzerland, I think, says a lot. And I think if you read Dufour's note in that email that they sent out, or the PDF they sent out, you know, it's about protecting all of their initiatives together, you know, protecting what they have, and that is Swiss watchmaking, not just Rolex, not just Patek, et cetera.
And can I ask you, so is your takeaway from all of this that this is categorically not survivable for Basel World?
I think it's going to be tough. I think, you know, I think Basel World will continue, but in a you know, handicapped manner. I don't know. I mean, I think if the Hayeks come back, if Swatch comes back, if LVMH stays, you know, look, these are massive brands. I mean, like, you know, it all depends on what everyone wants to do here. I mean, like, to be clear, LVMH is a larger company than Rolex and Patek combined. You know, not their watch and jewelry division, but the company itself is. So if they wanted to get really involved and make something big happen there, they could. You know, Swatch is also a massive company. I think it's bigger than Rolex by revenue if you combine all brands. In fact, it must be, because Omega is number two. You know, I mean, these are massive brands. You know, I think from the community perspective, everyone thinks of Rolex and Patek, but like there are brands, there are businesses that are bigger than them. And I think when you talk about influence, I think that there could be a salvageable, you know, kind of way forward here for Basel. But no matter what, I mean, you're going to lose that great buzz of, you know, seeing the Rolexes first and the Pateks first. And just as an enthusiast, that's a big part of it for me. And I think for you guys too.
Yeah, but you make an excellent point, which is this, it looks catastrophic at first and second, even third glance for Baselworld, but it also does create kind of an enormous opportunity for Swatch Group and LVMH Group if they choose to
yeah.
explore.
Yeah, they want to.
To me, the great variable here is, would one of those two groups want to make this a really unifying thing and also do something in April in Geneva in a way that's compatible as opposed to competitive? Like, if Swatch Group came back in and said, like, okay, you know what, we're going to host our own thing, but we're going to do it either immediately before or immediately after. We're not going to compete. Like, we want to make this about industry solidarity. You could, in theory, have almost everyone showing at the same time, like it was back in pre-91. Like, you could have Omega, Rolex, Patek, Cartier, IWC all showing at the same time.
Yeah. And I don't think that would be a bad thing. I mean, I think it would be slightly overwhelming unless there was some sort of, like, you know, coordination and timing. But I don't think that'd be a bad thing. I think also, like, we're still going to see this scattered releases over the years. We've seen it more and more over time where it's like, okay, SIHH and Basel are so crazy. And if you're not Rolex, Patek, Omega, Vacheron, AP, like one of the top five brands, like, you're just going to get lost anyway. So if you hold that for a week later and you've got trade press like us and you know, Monochrome and Fratello and Revolution, all those guys, like, you're going to be on the front page of all those sites that one day that you launch the new product, you know? So I think, like, if they do, you know, X percent of their product at this April, you know, event in 2021, and then Y percent, you know, over the remainder of the year, I think it would make sense for sure. But I do think there's real value in holding a global meeting of some kind. And I think, you know, so many people have said, oh, well, like, who cares? Like, you know, I'd rather just have the watches here in New York and do it here. And I understand that. Like, from photography, from, you know, logistics point of view, from, you know, cost of travel, it makes sense. But what you miss out on is, like, all the opportunities that come from seeing everyone else, you know, seeing Mike Tay from Singapore, seeing Jean-Claude Beaver from, you know, from Switzerland, and, like, seeing all these people that, like, just wouldn't, you know, kind of congregate in each, you know, smaller market.
I think that's a really good point. And I wonder, to get, you know, a bit nostalgic for a minute, we're saying Baselworld isn't necessarily dead yet. So I don't want to make this too, I want to position this right, but, like, Baselworld as we
know,
it's not necessarily dead, but
it is what they call strong marquee.
Dead as we
yeah,
no,
exactly.
But that's
why I hope I go. Like, he's not necessarily dead, but
he's not definitely
he's close,
dead.
You know.
Yeah, it's dead as we know it, right? So and
forever.
However, right, and however we choose to cover it in the future, it'll be different. You know, we're probably 100%. Not going to be rolling into a future Baselworld 2021 or 2025 or whatever, you know, 15 people deep for 8 days, you know, it's going to be a different thing. So I wonder what the thing is that each of you will miss the most about the old Baselworld. It could be last year, it could be how it was 10 years ago, but what's kind of the Baselworld thing you guys will miss the most? Maybe we'll start with James.
I mean, for me, with the exception of maybe now in New York, since I've gotten closer to the Hodinkee staff, like, Basel was the town outside of where I grew up where I had spent the most time in it, like, otherwise. Like, over the years, if you stack it all up, like, that was kind of like a third home or a fourth home. It was a town I kind of already knew. I felt like I already had my footing on that, and you'll be starting all over again in 2021 with kind of a new thing. New setup, who knows, you know, the ins and outs of the Airbnb or hotel market will change all of a sudden. And all of those things that are kind of like not have to be like big mental stressors will become something new again. It'll kind of change the tone and the pace of the show for next year, even just from an element entirely ancillary to the actual shows.
Yeah. Jack, how about you?
I think more than anything else, what I'm going to miss about the way it was just the sheer adrenaline rush of being there. You know, I mean, when I started covering watches, SIHH had already, you know, for several years been a separate show. And that felt like this really, really wonderful sort of well-mannered, high-touch, straight-up luxury, you know, kind of event. And it felt like a really nice kind of prelude to the main event, which was always Baselworld. And, you know, the sheer adrenaline rush that you would get walking in, you know, day one of press day, and saying to yourself, I am going to see some stuff today that matters to everybody. You know, I'm going to miss that.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with both James and Jack in different ways. Like, you know, on Jack's side, it's like, you know, I'm a pretty laid back person, but like on Baselworld days, like I'm fucking amped. I'm like, let's go crush this thing, you know?
I can attest to that. Ben is pretty hype on Baselworld.
Yeah,
days.
I mean, look, it's you know, I talk about this often, but there are so few moments where like the Watch world and Houdinki in particular, you know, in my context, you know, have the opportunity to cross into the mainstream and like, you know, make a statement to the world. And Baselworld every year is one of those times. You know, CNN is there, BBC is there, you know, global news outlets are there. We're often quoted and cited in those sources. You know, so it's exciting for us as these folks that are telling the story to the world to have even more eyes on us, you know? So I really get excited, you know, the adrenaline, as Jack said. As an enthusiast, look, I love Rolex and Patek and Tag and Omega and everyone as much as anybody else. And like to see that new stuff first through the window or, you know, in one of those early meetings is really exciting. And then beyond that, as I said, like I'm going to miss the hang. The hang is super fun, you know, and it's like, you know, whether it's Wei or Christian Hagen or the Worn and Wound guys who are, you know, 5 miles away from us, but we never see, you know, all these guys that you really only see, you know, a handful of times a year in a setting that is completely neutral, I think is really fun. And, you know, in a lost tape of Houdinki Radio, Christian Hagen, you know, gave some crazy stories last year, you know, just because I ran into him on the walk home. James is chuckling because it was actually like a really gross story that he told.
That's staying deep in the archive.
Totally lost, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, the social aspect of it. And also, as I said, the opportunity, you know, I can't tell you how many things for Houdinki's sake that have come out of being at Basel and meeting people from the FHH or the folks behind the Grand Prix or, you know, journalists at international publications. That part will certainly be missed. Again, we're not saying we're not going to be there ever again. So like that can all still happen. It'll just have a really different feeling overall.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, it's the chance encounters that happen at Baselworld that don't happen at a more structured show like SIHH. Like SIHH, it's much more, you're scheduled out, it's appointments, everything is very genteel, it's invite only, like it's just more structured. Whereas Baselworld, like you can wander around and like find weird stuff and meet strange, interesting people and end up with these, like Ben said, like the hang, like you end up with weird groups of people from across the industry. And you know, just chance encounters. Like I remember, you know, walking by the Acrivia booth a couple years ago, I'm sure I've told the story before, but like, and seeing Philippe Dufour walk out and be like, maybe I should go check that out, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And then meeting Recep and like becoming friends with him and really appreciating those watches now. And, you know, like that kind of stuff, I think only happens at Baselworld, really.
I agree. I mean, the city is just set up for it, you know? And I think like, you know, you're talking about Recep, like, you know, I have similar memories with the Grunfeld dudes, you know, Bart and Tim.
Yeah.
And it's like early on, before we ever worked with them or anything, you know, on our limited edition, like, you know, I think it was Robert Jahn from Fratello was like, hey, you should meet these guys, and Dufour was in the booth. And then, you know, after seeing the watches, I'm like, wow, these are crazy things. They're like, you want to go have a beer? And I was like, sure, like I got nothing going on, you know. And then like, you know, I probably had three, they probably had 13. And then like, you know, it was just like, you know, a crazy night. And then I'm sure like, you know, Roger Smith showed up and then like the Bremont guy showed up. And it's just like that aspect of it, which is, you know, it's almost like, it's like college, you know, it's just like, oh, like, yeah, come on, you know, come on, Roger Smith, like have a drink with us, you know? And it's just a really jovial, fun environment that SIHH does not provide, you know, at least in the same way, just because Basel has all these little restaurants and bars right outside the fair where like, you're gonna see people.
Yeah. All right, the last thing I want to ask you guys before we go is, what do you think coming out of this means for the industry as a whole? Like this I think is a bellwether of something. I'm just not exactly sure what. Do you guys have any thoughts on kind of like what this can tell us about the big picture right now?
I mean, I don't know that it's necessarily going to change anything fundamentally on the industry side. I mean, certainly I think it's opened up a lot of brand size to the, you know, to the sort of greater possibilities that exist in terms of doing things differently, developing their own communications practices outside the trade shows, developing their own product launch schedules outside the trade shows. I don't know whether it's going to create any really sort of like, you know, basic changes in the way the industry operates.
Fair.
I think a lot of what we're seeing this year is it would be the kind of thing where I don't think you'd want to make law based on this case. I think that they're adjusting to do their very best. And by, I think, coming together, especially with some big dogs coming in, I think that's a really wise decision. I think that's absolutely a positive move for the industry as a whole. But I think, I hope that in a few years we'll look back and say, like, that was a crazy year, not, oh, that was a catalyst to a crazy time.
Yeah. I think you're completely right, James. Like, I think this is a reflection of what is going on in the world right now. And, you know, if you listen to this podcast, you know, years from now or even 6 months from now, this is what, April 14th, 2020, like, we are in the thick of, you know, the greatest pandemic, certainly of my lifetime, for sure. I think for most of ours. And I think, you know, this is all a product of macroeconomic trends. This is not something that, you know, I think there's a lot of stuff brewing for a long time, but I'm confident in saying this would not have occurred without what is going on with COVID-19. And I think at the end of the day, you know, based on what Jean-François Dufour and Thierry Stern said in the PDF they sent out, you know, this is a time of unity. And I, you know, to see, as I said in the beginning of the call, like, or podcast, whatever this is, hint, we're actually on a phone call right now. you know, I bet you guys didn't know that. You know, the idea that Rolex would even put their name next to, you know, forget Patek Philippe, but like Chopard and Chanel. I mean, these are just different brands. You know, Rolex doesn't play that game. Most brands don't play that game. And so all of a sudden you're having real unity here, which I think is really nice. And like, you know, you forget that Jean-François Dufour used to work at Chopard. You know, after that he was at Zenith, I believe. You know, so it's like everyone is interconnected. So it's really nice to see this small industry kind of coming together and unifying here.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. I mean, I think for me, the thing I'm hoping to see come out of this is that this is a sign that everybody's kind of realized that, you know, times were good. And when times were good, it was easy for everybody to get a little like nitpicky and want to do their own thing and want to have absolute control and whatever. But that everyone's realizing that ultimately standing together and acknowledging that, like, making watches a bigger thing as an idea benefits everyone, and that it's much easier and better and more effective to do that together than separately. I'm hoping that's the direction things move in over the next couple of years.
Yeah, it's all we can hope for.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for chatting with me about this, guys. I thought it'd be good to get some of our first reactions. I'm sure over the coming days, we'll learn more. I'm sure we'll see some other brands react to this. I can't imagine that this is the end of the news here. But it's nice that we can get our first responses. We're literally like 3 hours from this landing in our inboxes to now. So we'll get this out there, have a little document so that we can all look back later and think how dumb we were and have much better takes down the road.
Absolutely. Thank you, Stephen.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Great to see you guys. Stephen.
This bonus episode of Hodinkee Radio was recorded remotely by our team of editors and was produced by Grayson Korhonen. Please remember to subscribe and rate the show. It really does make a difference for us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you Monday at our usual time.